In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
In the spotlight we go. It's fascinating. Yesterday we had a cardiologist in the spotlight. Tomorrow we got Chris Moroleng, who's the, as you may know, the newly appointed COO of the SABC. Looking forward to his story. And in between all that, we've got somebody who's not a cardiologist, but certainly spent lots of time with patients and will understand all of that and what that takes. But there's far more than just that about my In the Spotlight guest, Indeleka Mandela. Good chatting to you, Inde. Thanks for allowing me to put you in the spotlight.
Afternoon, Ashraf, and good afternoon to the listeners.
Okay, now, I can't ignore this part, right?
Yes.
Obviously, with a surname like Mandela, mm-hmm. how often, and let's assume people don't know you. Mm-hmm. Just forget those that recognize you, those mm-hmm. that don't know mm-hmm. you. When they pick up your name, it could be, you know, going on a flight, it could be an Uber driver, I don't know, right? How often do you get asked about that name?
99.9% of the time. Mm-hmm. I mean, it ranges from "no, you lie" to a person going really, really gaga, you know. And
so the national one would be, "How are you related?" Isn't
yes,
it?
How are you related? Yeah.
And then you'd say.
Then I would say, "Well, I'd like to introduce myself as the first of the first of the first,
yeah,
the
yeah.
first grandchild from the first wife from the first son."
Yeah. And then they naturally don't believe you.
They naturally don't believe me. I said, you know, for a country that say they know Nelson Mandela, they love Nelson Mandela, you know very little about his family history of who his sisters were. You know one part of this man, which was a political life. And fortunately for me, I know him as a political, his political life, him as a father, him as a grandfather, as a great-grandfather, and.
Mm. So, I mean, that's a fascinating thought. So you're saying it happens just about all the time?
It happens just about all the time.
Does that tire you?
You know, sometimes, you know, it depends how I'm feeling that day. But most of the time, it humbles me. That people, yes, they would pay attention because of who granddad was, you know. Mm. It annoys me only if a person ignored you from the first instance and thought that you were a non-entity. And when upon knowing who you are, your heritage, then they'll start paying attention to it, because for me that's pretentious.
Yeah, yeah.
You should like people for who they are, even if you don't know where their background.
And that conversely, and we will talk about your own career in just a moment, conversely, would there be an expectation? Because, I mean, you know, it's funny, when you have that surname, people almost expect you to be, well, let's call it this, Mandela-esque or Mandela-like. So you and they're talking about one person. So you all need to behave in the same way for some reason. Right?
They do. They all expect us to be, you know, humanitarians or philanthropists or mostly in the political life. And I always say, well, that may be that granddad was this political giant, but what you forget is that he spent most of his time in prison. And by the time that he was released, most of us were adults.
Yeah.
And we had chosen our career choice. We had our career choice. So he was not there to influence us into politics.
So he's not the typical granddad that most people listening would think about, isn't
he? No. I mean, from the very first time that I saw him at Robben Island at age 16, he was not the typical granddad. He was a granddad that would ask you about a boyfriend, about school, about pap smear.
I read about it. Okay.
Yes.
He actually asked you that.
Yes, he would ask you
and
that.
And what would you say? Who's this guy coming to ask
I mean,
me?
Honestly, you must remember, right? I mean, when I was 16, I was a very this shy girl that was brought up in the rural Eastern Cape in Kofimvaba, and my grandmother, Evelyn, was very religious, a Jehovah's Witness. So we hardly ever talked about boyfriends. And there was this man asking me about a boyfriend, and I was blushing. But that was the nature of who granddad was.
Oh, fascinating, yeah. Do you find, I mean, therefore, that even now there's pressure on you to live up to that name?
Yes, there always will be a pressure on all of us, his progeny.
And is that a good thing?
Well, I think it depends on each and every one of us and how you look at it. For me, largely because most of the things that I do are to do with humanity. So it's not so much of a pressure because it's a passion that I have. Mm. I suppose it would be a pressure to some family member that want, for instance, to be a DJ or a rap singer. because that would not be typical Mandela, Mandela-like.
Yes, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I suppose to some family members that want to choose a different life for themselves, it would be a pressure. But I don't find it a pressure to me.
Because, I mean, overall, and whether the person is, you know, like yourself, the first of the first of the first grandchildren, or whether it's the youngest of the great-great-grandchildren, you will know this, that that the word Mandela is a calling card.
It is.
I mean, there's no doubt about that.
No, there's no doubt about it. We had this, you know, debate with my cousins when Granddad got ill, 2013. You know, one of the TV stations wanted to, you know, to pick our brains, so to speak, to speak to the next generation of Mandelas. And some of my cousins said, well, we don't want to be interviewed, blah, blah, blah. And then this is not what our life said. Well, that may be so. But I'm of the belief that you choose a family that you're born into. You chose to be born into this family, and that comes with all its own set of responsibilities and the way that you have got to behave. Yes, there can only be one Nelson Mandela. All we can do is to try and emulate him. Yes, that does not preclude you from choosing a life of your own, but there's a certain decorum that you need to carry yourself with.
Which you can't get out of. I mean,
no,
so
you can't.
So there are privileges, but there are massive responsibilities.
Yes, it's massive responsibilities.
Well, it's fascinating. 0891104207. We are chatting, we're putting in the spotlight in this case, Indileka Mandela. So the point made, first of the first of the first. Well, I mean, you've obviously rehearsed this one, like, that's what it is. The first grandchild, effectively, right?
Yes,
the first daughter.
Yes, of the first son.
First son, I mean, sorry. Yes, yeah. Of Nelson Mandela, Madiba. Yes. 0891104207. Now, if you need to SMS 40938 and tweets are, as always, welcome, hashtag Afternoon Talk. And, you can, you know, quote my guests, but also, you know, add your own thoughts in terms of what is it you're particularly liking that you're listening to, which is all just fantastic. Okay, so clearly you can't, having spoken about Madiba, Nelson Mandela, Granddad, as you'd call him affectionately, this can't be his show. It's ultimately about him. So outside of him, and the umbilical cord that is connected between him and you people, literally and biologically in this case, what do you do with your life? What is it you do?
Well, I'm running the Thembekile Mandela Foundation, having founded it during the time that Granddad was alive, 2012, but only registered it in 2014 after he passed, owing to the fact that when he was alive, when he started getting ill, 2011, I made a conscious decision to be by his bedside, owing to the fact that I was an ICU nurse.
Okay, so you understood that.
Yes, yeah. I understood that, and I became a de facto liaison person between the medical team and the family. So it was registered in 2014, and the work that it espouses is in the rural space and informal settlements in terms of education. We do education, health, and youth development. Education-wise, we look at infrastructure requirements in terms of science laboratories, libraries, sports facility, and computer labs. Reason for that is that we're living now in the ICT age, and gifted children in the rural areas will slip through the cracks if that is not beefed up. Health-wise, we deal with the sanitary way, where we collect sanitary way and
pads
to give to girls that do not go to school, because on average, a girl in the rural area will miss 50 days of schooling per year.
You see, Granddad, when he asked you about the pap smear all those years ago, he understood. That's why.
He did. He definitely did. Although I did not know what pap smear meant during that time. Youth development, we do, you know, empowering the youth in terms of unemployment. We recently finished training 100 youth in the area, Western area, where we train them in agricultural practices to be absorbed by industry or have their own co-ops. But important this year, being the centennial year, we launched a program called Leading Like Mandela.
Okay, just pause on that, because I want to know more about Leading Like Mandela. Because ultimately, the best way you can honor him is obviously to emulate, not to revere, but to emulate. I think that's really, really important. Mine, the spotlight guest, Indileka Mandela, is with me. Your thoughts are welcome. Calls, family, friends, colleagues, chommies, all of them, absolutely welcome. 0891 104207. This is the Afternoon Talk Show.
In the Spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
All right, Shindileka Mandela is the In the Spotlight guest. Okay, we were talking about the Thembekile Mandela Foundation, right? The right time.
Yes, yes, okay. Thembekile Mandela Foundation.
So, okay, so you were talking about then this important year and living the Mandela life. Explain what's the brand called?
It's called Leading Like Mandela.
Leading Like Mandela. Right.
And it's a leadership program. It's a transformative program where, you know, it has 8 modules where we teach, you know, the youth on how extrapolating for the value system that Madiba had. Because if you look at leadership, people tend to look at leadership as something as a leader of an industry, a CEO, a leader of a country, or a leader of an organization. And yet they forget that leadership lies in each and every one of us. If you look at the life of my grandfather, his leadership qualities started sprouting when he was young. So they have got to be nurtured throughout the growth path of a person. We launched it in December with University of Johannesburg. The reason being that we wanted to launch it with an academic institution, and we took 100 students. UJ invited 100 students, 10 students from 5 institutions. It was Saltpleit University, University of Pretoria, Wits, UJ, and
you got those students.
Yes, we got those students, and you know, it was my aha moment, because what came out with the students, some of them were part of the SRC, is that, you know, a leader is the one that sets the agenda for the people to follow, and you could see from people that were from the EFF, you know, the leadership style that they have imbibed from the leader, who is Julius Malema. I mean, because there was a lot of disruptions during.
So it's the personality of the movement.
Yes, it's the personality of the movement. I mean, some of them even wanted us to detract from the course and say, look, we were told that we are going to come and talk about fees must fall. I said, well, you can't come to a program that's called Leading Like Mandela and suddenly want to
not
talk about...
Not Lead Like Mandela.
Yes. And then those are the burning issues which we can show from the fireside chats which we had in the evening. But you can't detract the whole course to talk about that. We want to show you that these are the values that he subscribed to, are the ones that sustained him as a leader. And how do you develop that in your personal space?
Well, how did they respond to that, by the way?
It was budding. It was the budding of heads, you know. But eventually, they got their aha moment, because it was a 5-day program. Their aha moment came on the 4th day to say, you know, even when you talk about fees must fall, the language that you use in any given case informs the outcome. If you say fees must fall and you come with the energy of disruption and of burning things, of course, you know, you need to, what message do you want to bring in? Then they said, okay, we need to restructure our message to say we want a decolonized education system versus fees must fall. They got the point, because it's the wording that you use. It's to do with, you know, emotional intelligence. It's to do with the IQ and the EQ.
So bottom line, and we'll maybe talk about this even some other time, but just so Leading Like Mandela, the bottom line, the end goal of Leading Like Mandela, the project, run through your foundation, right, would be what?
We've got that. It fits in with our youth program, because I believe personally that to be able to change, to shift focus, and to be able to change the trajectory of history, we need to change the mindset of young people. That's why it's very important to me specifically to say that let us shape the minds so that we can have a different caliber of leadership. Leadership, we've had a leadership crisis for the past 9 years in the country. That is why we need to start at an earlier age, so that by the time they become leaders of industry and leaders of country, we have a different type of leadership.
And your thoughts in terms of, you know, are South Africans, we're talking of all levels, right? Do they quite understand their role as as leaders in their own country?
I think the message gets muted and lost somewhere, you know. And if you had to look about with the last 9 years in government, there has been systematic breakdown of state institutions and also leadership qualities, the type of leaders that we've had. They've not stood up to the bar of the leaders like Walter Sisulu, like Governor Mbeki, like the Rivonia trialists. They were cut from a different cloth. And what made those leaders the type of leaders that they were? It was their value system.
How do you understand? You were critical of the leadership of the ruling party, which is the ANC, which is really your granddad's party. Mm. How you've said lots of things publicly. What did you say? But very importantly, how then did you internalize it for yourself? Because you were seeing a party that was, it wasn't working for you.
More than not working for me, I was seeing a party that is not espousing the values of the founding fathers of the ANC. Because if you looked at their founding document, at the Freedom Charter, the people shall govern, they were leaders of a certain caliber. They had a deep sense of value that was steeped in the people more than themselves. So the caliber of leaders that was at the time that I spoke, I always maintain that the two things that actually were the tipping point for me was Life as a Dimeni and the CPS and the SASSA debacle. For me, that's just because if you look at the SASSA debacle, it spoke to the vast majority of the people that benefit from that are women. And it let women down.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, I met Zane Dango was in the spotlight here about a week ago, and I bumped into him on Saturday about just changes within that particular department as well. Time to play a song now. Now we ask our spotlight guests to pick out a song. You've gone for what this time, right?
Yes, Bob James.
Why that song?
Because I feel this is the time that we all need to put our shoulders to the spoke and rebuild our country.
So it's a challenge to you, to me and to you and
to everybody that's listening.
You listening as well. It's this time. Okay, that's this time, which is my time, your time, and everybody else's time, which is the song picked by Indileke Mandela, right? She's in the spotlight and we'll continue chatting her current position, the CEO of the Temekile Mandela Foundation, and you've heard about that, leading like Mandela. Perhaps you want to know a lot more about that. We're not going to dwell on that, but I think it's very important that you know more about that. Just quickly, what are your thoughts now about the political changes that have taken place? So having been despondent and maybe supported the call for Zuma must fall, right?
I mean, I did.
Right?
I did.
What do you feel now?
I feel optimistic. I feel hopeful. We're not there yet. There's still a lot of work to do, but I'm hopeful.
When will you know we're on the right track? Because, I mean, the last 2-3 weeks, there's a different euphoria, and I understand that. But there's also alarm bells say, hold it, guys. It's not going to just change in a week. Mm. When would you know down the line that actually we're on the right track?
For me, it will be when we are represented by a different woman in the presidency than Matabile Dlamini.
Then you'll know that.
Then I'll know that.
But why would you put the focus on just one person?
Well, it's much broader than that. There's a saying that if you want to educate a country or you want to educate a nation, you need to empower a woman. And I feel that Minister Batabile Dlamini has been a letdown to most women in the things that she's done. If you look at him and at her supporting a woman abuser, and also you look at the stance towards Fezekile Nsukela Khuzwayo, and that gives you a glimpse of how her belief system is. Yes, it is much broader than that. It will also be when most youth have jobs, because right now youth unemployment is extremely high, and in a country that is young, we are a young democracy, not in terms of years, but also people that are the backbone of society are young people. And these are the people that don't have jobs. I mean, I think we are sitting at close to 30 or 40%, and that's just and that's people that is frightening.
How do we get the jobs? I suppose if President Ramaphosa gives you an audience, what would you tell him? You think about that.
Okay.
We get to the news headlines now. It's 3:30.
In the spotlight on Afternoon Talk with Ashraf Garda. All the big names making big money and even bigger headlines. Only on SAFM.
Sure, they want to talk about the nursing career of Indileke Mandela in a moment. But okay, last thought in terms of President Ramaphosa. Mm-hmm. In terms of what would you tell him? He meets you for coffee and you tell him what?
I would tell him that the way to get the youth employed is to build entrepreneurs rather than build people that would want to be employed and build up, you know, create a pool of employees. Because I believe in giving a person a rod to fish. You know, if you can create entrepreneurs in terms of agriculture, real estate, yes, there's a land act on the table. Yes, over and above agriculture, how's about real estate? To make sure that we diversify, because real estate, you know, appreciates. Black people have got the most buying power especially in the township. I mean, they are members of Stockfell. Why not take some of the Stockfell people members, buy land en masse as a group, and make sure that wealth is created generationally. And they because farming is good, but farming is also generational. You don't wake up today and become a farmer.
Absolutely.
It's something that's generational. Yeah, so to be able to break that level of unemployment is to build entrepreneurs rather than create a large pool of people that are employees, because their market cannot absorb all of those people.
Okay, now the other thing, you are aware that I'm part of the Champion South Africa movement with the stated goal of turning this country into a champion nation. So, and this is a question we put to everybody when we give talks, like, what is the one thing that the country, we're not even talking about a certain political party, needs to do to shift the needle from a mid-table nation to a champion nation?
Oh, difficult one. It is to create a people that go back to a sense of values. Because if you look at us as South Africans, we had a deep sense of value. We had certain values that we subscribe to. And those values have fallen by the wayside. And those values are what sustained us as a people and as a nation. If you can then go back to our value system, the value system of Ubuntu, of helping another person without waiting to gain out of that, we can prosper and become the champion nation that we aspire to be.
It certainly happens. You know, I think that's very, very important. Let's go to your career. So you're a nurse in terms of profession.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, yeah. I'm a nurse.
Give me the story. How, you know? Let's go back to your early days. You're from the Eastern Cape, and share your own experiences.
Well, Eastern Cape. After I finished my matric, I then went to teacher training college, Clarkbury, which is also alma mater of Granddad. Mm-hmm. I hated teaching with them. I didn't hate teaching as such. I hated the school, Clarkbury, because it was a backward school. It didn't have ablution facilities. Suffice to say, that's the year I fell pregnant with my first son. And after that, I told my grandmother, you can drag me kicking and screaming. I'm not going back. You know. And
What did she say?
She just looked at me and said, you know, the thing is, she just shook her head. And then, because she was also a community nurse, she said, well, if you don't like teaching, you know, maybe you can do nursing. And I just took off as a nurse. It's something that I connected with immediately. I loved it. You know, that's why I even went to work in ICU when I finished. And in nursing, I went the full spectrum from nursing, bedside nursing, ICU. I left and joined the pharmaceutical industry, joined Shereg. From that, I became a phlebotomist, which is a nurse that draw bloods, went to the medical aid. So I did like a...
So you've been in the medical space all my career.
Then around the 2000, I joined Quest Staffing Solutions. Mm-hmm. After that, then I veered away from nursing.
Okay, so that's different,
yeah,
right?
That was completely different. Then I veered away from nursing. And then I went to as a project manager for Equiton. After that, it was when I was toying around to say, what do I do? My aha moment came 2012, when a family friend visited, called me to say, look, you need to visit Clarkbury. Not only did your grandfather go there, but you also went there.
Of course, that school that you so disliked.
Yeah, so disliked. It is in a state of disrepair. You know, as a Mandela, you know, and also having people that you know that are influential, you need to go to the school. I mean, it broke my heart when I went to the school to see children squatting in the room more like this size, you know, sleeping on the floor, don't have ablution facilities, washing in buckets, some of them sleeping behind the door. Mm-hmm. It is then that I decided I would dedicate my life with community building, and I would start where Granddad left off when he started the Nelson Mandela Foundation.
And since then, that's where you've been?
That's what I've been doing. Yeah, that's what I've been doing.
How are you measuring then your impact of that particular part of your life?
Well, to say that, I mean, from 2014 to date, we've got 10,000 girls on our books that we collect sanitary wear and donate to, all of them for a year. That's been quite our success story. The 100 unemployed youth that we've recently graduated, the ones that we trained in Johannesburg last December. And certainly, if we get more partners that come on board, because our vision is to create centers of excellence in the rural areas where we can have the state-of-the-art computer lab, state-of-the-art science laboratory, library, sports facilities, where all the children can participate. There's a huge outcry of teachers that there's a shortage of maths and science teachers. The Department of Education is not leveraging enough on the ICT industry, because through connectivity, government subsidizes these private schools, a teacher in St. Stephen's or St. Mary's can teach in real time 50 schools in the rural areas, but provided they do have the centers of excellence. So that's our vision. If we can find partners to be
able to
be.
Are you battling to find partners?
Yes, we are battling to find partners.
And is the partners monetary partners or
in kind and also monetary, because to run such a thing, you do need funds, nominal funds to run it, but mainly in kind.
Maybe there's a chance someone listening was like, okay, I can connect with you. Can you give us an email address perhaps?
Yes, ndileka@tmandelafoundation.org.
So NDILEKA, right?
T as in Tom, okay. MandelaFoundation.org.
Okay, got that. But hopefully we'll tweet all that information as well. And nursing, what is the... So you were drawn to it immediately.
Yes.
Share some of your experiences with us.
You know, as a nurse, you especially as an ICU nurse, you get people that are almost flat, like comatose, and because you get them straight out of theater, and to be able to nurse a person back to health, it's something to be proud of, and it gives you some sense, a deep sense of pride. I remember the one time we had this patient, 24-year-old man that had severe case of meningitis, that he was paralyzed from neck down.
Yeah, wow.
And we nursed that guy for 3 months in ICU, and he was discharged, and he came back a year later. He had to relearn to walk. He had to relearn how to talk and to be able to converse with that person. It was something, I can't even explain it, the sense of gratitude. Yes, I know that we are just a cog in God's bigger plan of actually being the one that deliver that health. But it's ultimate up to God. But to be able to be part of that, it's something that I can't explain.
For the record, I mean, I think you dabbled to a degree in nephrology at some stage. You
were concerned. Yes, I did.
My daughter's been a kidney patient for the last 10 years, and she's just had a donor transplant about a week ago. So the thought of just how important that support is just absolutely critical. Yeah. Well, what about nurses? I mean, how... You know, people are very critical of nurses. Like, they don't do their job any longer. They don't care. I hear that all the time.
Yeah.
And we're not even talking about government hospitals. These are private hospitals. You get the criticism. What would you like to say about it?
Well, I suppose, with us, we had the apprentice type of nursing where we spent 2 months on block and the rest of the time by the bedside. I think when it was Manto Shabalala that changed the system of how nurses were trained. They were now trained at varsity, and then they will spend less time on the ward. You don't get to have that human-to-human touch and interface with
You think we're paying the price for that now?
We're paying the price for that, because the nurse that came through our system, where we spend more time in the ward, we're able to interface with patients much more than the caliber of nurses that spend more time at varsity.
So as a nurse and as an ICU nurse, and then as the first grandchild of the one and only Madiba, you were at close quarters watching his decline, obviously, an inevitable passing, yeah. Never mind what others may say, right? Understand you give talks around it, but perhaps a good, share some experiences about what can you tell us?
It was difficult, you know, Ashraf. I became a nurse instead of a person going through the motions of that anytime soon your grandfather is going to pass. I remember with the utmost clarity when my grandmother, when my aunt called me June to say that, you know, Ndileka Tata has been admitted to hospital. And then we rushed to Pretoria Hospital, I mean, to see him with all those tubes. And yes, Granddad would bounce back from time to time. But Granddad lost consciousness on the July 18th or 2013.
On his birthday?
On his birthday. Okay. And he never regained consciousness. And to go through those motions, and for me, I did not rely on doctors to tell me what's going on. I could look at the charts, I could at the monitor and know what's happening. And I know that, you know, there's an extra beat there and his heart rate is going much faster than it should. And I would go and go read the charts to an extent that doctors were hiding it from me from time to time because my aunt would say, okay, go and see what the chart says because this is what they told me. Just go see if that is true. And I would go. Yes, I would try to water it down when I would tell my cousins what was going on. But it was not an easy thing because I was going through the same motions that they were going through, you know. The day that Granddad passed, I remember I came to Houghton.
What was that? Just to rewind, so when he slipped into unconsciousness, if that's the right word, on July 18th. I mean, he passed away 6 months later, virtually, right? But when was the moment that, as a family, and I don't mean the day he passed away, before that, obviously, that you knew he's not coming back? Probably would have known that a long time before.
Yeah. Well, it was for me, I knew that, you know, it was July, around October, November. Because I remember I was due to go for a trip in Germany and I was saying to Mom Grace, you know, I don't think I should go to the trip because I don't know if he's going to survive. And he said, no, go talk to him, you know. And we had a way of communicating with Granddad and he would squeeze your hand if he, you know, he wants. I would say to him, okay, Granddad, I'm leaving. And if I would hold hands and I would say, Granddad, I'm leaving. If he did not want me to leave, as I hang my head, you would then hold grab it.
Wow.
And until he lets go, then I would then leave. And I went to buy his best. I said, look, Granddad, I need to go, but please, whatever happens, please wait for me. I'm coming back in 5 days. I then left. I came back on the day I arrived. It was the Sunday preceding the Thursday that he passed.
Okay.
And my aunt said, look, I mean, his heart rate stopped this morning. I said, oh, wow. I went to see him, but his heart rate was still going, you know. Monday, I did not go to see him. Tuesday, I get a call from Mom Grass in the evening and said, look, Ndileka, I've been trying to get hold of your aunt. I said to her, well, let me call her house and said, look, whatever you do, please bring her to the house. I said, Mom, what's going on? She does not tell me. I said, okay, I'm going to see in Houghton just now. I called my aunt and said, let's meet in Houghton. I mean, I could see from the look of the doctors that, you know, it's going to hit us at any moment.
Now, we've got 45 seconds for you to describe all of that. Then we're going to say goodbye, which is terrible.
Okay. And then, you know, on the day that he passed, and then we got, the doctor said, look, now it's crunch time. You need to then tell the family that, you know, it's only going to, you know, he's had another bout of infection and there's nothing much you can do in terms of giving him antibiotics. We reached the end of the line. And this is it.
That's when how did the family feel at that point, just when you knew, like, okay, he's gone?
It was surreal, really. It's. I mean, Granddad was larger than life and all of a sudden, boom, had stopped breathing.
Can we leave it like this? Because we have to stop breathing on air now.
Yes.
But I'll make this thing to you today. Can you come in and talk to us for 30 minutes about the passing of Madiba?
I will.
Just explain that in a lot more detail, because I think it's something that we'd love to know. Okay. We're going to leave it at that. Okay. There's just not enough time, unfortunately, in the Leka Mandela. Thanks for your time. Most
appreciated.
It's been fascinating putting her in the spotlight. Time now for Radio.